The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in this morning, we appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, back from vacation once again, in case you missed it yesterday. In the hizzy.
Yeah.
Barcarada.
Let's go.
The barrage. You did a fine job last night in finding some props that we're going to go through today. DraftKings has something called the Drive for 5 in the NFL. It is essentially matchup bets with a tie thrown in.
Drive for Week 5. I kept doing that same thing, too. I might have written it down on the rundowns differently. Drive for 5.
Drive for Week 5. Right? We should be clear. I'm sorry. I should be clear.
Drive I did the same thing.
By the way, it shouldn't be Drive for Week 5 either. It should be Drive through Week 5.
Yes, you are correct. Drive for Week 6.
Yes. So, we're off to a fine start this morning.
Yeah, sorry, DraftKings. We're trying to promote it.
You were trying to promote it. Anyway, DraftKings did this great thing where they have it's called Drive for Week 5. What it is essentially a matchup between two NFL teams with a tie thrown in, right? It's a three-way. And they put up they put up 12 different one of these or 6 different? I think it's 12. No, it's 6.
I was also looking at
6 different ones.
Yeah, I was also looking at a different state last night. I realized I had more options than what I had showed you originally. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go through a bunch of these today because I believe that you have landed on something that is so bettable.
I'm with you. I know we match on one of them, but like it was as soon as I sat down, the first one I looked at, I'm like, I'd bet this. Right now, if it was available to me.
That's exactly right. And you hit on a point also, which is we don't have the ability to bet DraftKings here in Nevada. DraftKings is not in this jurisdiction. So not like we can influence it. This is one of these where, you know, oftentimes, you know, we go through props that are available where we can't bet them because they're not in Nevada. And we say, we're very honest, though, yeah, we probably wouldn't bet it even if we were there or not. These we would absolutely bet. So we'll get to those momentarily.
Yeah, I think I found 3. That I would bet.
I found 2 for sure, and like the other 4,
right?
Kind of wanted to also.
Like I've got 3, I think I would bet, and probably 2 more that are heavy leans one way for me.
Oh, we gotta go through all of them. We'll do that. Drew Dinsick will join us here as well. Paul Spohr will join us. Paul Carr, more soccer today. Let me get this straight, Kelly. I have a question for you. So,
Suck again.
How many goals did Romelu Lukaku score so far?
0.
Now, does he have any games moving forward to add to that total?
0 moving forward.
So that's unfortunate, right? That's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, that's bad.
Okay.
At least you guys went with the long shot bet of Golden Boot. I just had him to lead his own team in scoring, which he's not going to have accomplished.
Soccer. Paul Carr later on the show.
USA with a fine performance last night. God, that was a gross game.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
Fell asleep at halftime.
Yeah.
Fell asleep at halftime.
I feel like I watched a lot of soccer yesterday, and boy, it was brutal. There was not much scoring either in Europe or in Copa America. a lot of officiating.
This is what
outrage,
I want to talk about.
Right, in the U.S. game last night that I don't even fully understand.
Oh,
right?
I think I like it for the half that I saw, not to get all Tony Kornheiser, that I like fell asleep at halftime. I don't know what happened, but that referee. And again, we are not the biggest soccer experts in the world, but it was clear to everyone, the announcers, the halftime crew, that he had multiple, to say questionable is an understatement, there was the yellow card. He's going to put up the yellow card, and he let play resume.
That was bizarre. Yes, that was bizarre.
And then there was a handball where the Americans had an advantage, and he whistled it dead.
I don't know if I remember the last time a broadcast was as open about blasting a referee during a game like that last night. I mean, it was over and over again.
Yeah, I'm just mentioning too. There's more. Paul Carr will get into that coming up. First though, because I know.
And then I caught a video this morning where I guess Pulisic was angry the whole game about it, but he went up to shake all the refs' hands after the game, and the guy snubbed him.
The guy snubbed
Pulisic,
him.
Pulisic put his hand out to shake him. The guy snubbed him.
It's amazing. First, though, some NBA news. You said some Donovan Mitchell news this morning, real quick.
Yes, we do. Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs have agreed to a max extension, 3 years, $150 million. So he had 1 year left on his contract. There was a lot of discussion of whether he be trying to be would he be moved this summer with that 1 year left of control on the contract. Now, what essentially he does, so this is a 3 year max extension from now, is in the third year there is a player option. So really, what it does is extends Cleveland's control for him over the next two seasons, and then he's going to have that player option up. So we could be back right back where we started from next summer already, starting to talk about is he possibly on the market. But 3 years from now is when they're expecting that next bump in salary, Gil. So everybody's kind of thinking, okay, he'll stay there for the next couple more years, and then jump in on the first next big movement with the salary cap and be able to land a big deal.
Weren't you the guy that was like, he's definitely out of there after this year?
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Good for Cleveland. Does that move the needle at all? They're not cracking the top four in the East, are they?
Well, this is what's interesting about Cleveland. Also, I think Darius Garland now becomes, I would think this, but a lot of people have said this too, and we've gotten, this has all kind of been wrong. Either Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland, one of the two of them was probably leaving this summer. So if Mitchell's staying, is Garland now a little bit more on the open market? There's been some reports, though, that they've been a little bit more closed off talking about him with teams than expected. So maybe that opens up here, maybe it doesn't. The one thing that's tough with Cleveland as far as whether it moves the needle or not.
Guess what I'm asking, the way I ask that is, was it built in to the market that he was staying or leaving?
I don't think it moved. It did not move much. Yeah, it did not.
So it was already
built
in.
So it was kind of built in. Yeah. The thing that's tough with Cleveland is they're different from a lot of other teams where a lot of these guys, if a lot of their younger guys just continue to improve, right, that's how they get better, right? Is Mobley going to take another step forward? Is Jared Allen going to take another step forward? If Darius Garland's there, does he take another step forward? Like, the team's got the pieces there that they could be good. It's just we haven't really seen it, right, over the past couple years. They've been a good team in the East. They just haven't been a great team.
The other thing is Klay Thompson signing with the Dallas Mavericks. Klay Thompson signing with the Dallas Mavericks, which is, the official end. We already knew that the Warriors dynasty was over, but that marks the official end to the Warriors dynasty. I was retweeting a piece that you and I did in April when I said, if this is, in fact, the last game that Klay Thompson plays in a Warriors uniform, let's pour out a 40 for him, basically, and here's the tribute. Klay reportedly taking less money in pursuit of another championship, a guy who rarely knows seasons where he's not playing in an NBA Finals, I guess. So he's like, let me see if I can latch on to Luka and the Mavericks here. Significant for you or like just on the margins?
Fairly. I think the combination, if you look at the whole of what Dallas did so far in free agency, where you've moved Tim Hardaway, you moved Josh Green, and you're getting these pieces back in Derrick Jones Jr., which was obviously massive for them in the playoffs. Tim Hardaway Jr. was big for them in the regular season and then didn't play at all in the playoffs. I think when you're exchanging those guys for Klay Thompson, Najee Marshall, who I love coming over from the Pelicans, I think that was a great pickup. I think he might not be as great on ball defensively as what Derrick Jones Jr. brought to the table, but he's still a good defender. Big, strong dude who's going to be able to play in there 3 and 4 and guard some of those guys on the perimeter that other teams are going to throw out. I think he's a great signing. Quentin Grimes is involved in that deal, too. If Quentin Grimes gets back at all to what he looked like a couple years ago with the Knicks, overall, I think it is a pretty significant improvement from that group that they had a year ago. And, I mean, for those of us that have Mavericks tickets, how many times were you just watching three-pointers from above that break area just brick in that finals, and now it's Klay Thompson who's going to be there with all the open looks he's probably ever going to have wanted to see in his entire career with playing off of Kyrie and Luka.
Warriors, meanwhile, get D'Anthony Melton looking for Lauri Markkanen maybe. I just want to say this about Klay, too. Klay has, four championships, four titles, 6 NBA Finals appearances, 5 All-Star games, but 2 of the coolest NBA records you could ever have.
Oh, totally.
14 three-pointers made in a game, which is the second coolest. Curry and a couple others have 13 made in a game, but Klay holds it at 14. And then the coolest of all time, 37 points in one quarter of basketball, which he did in the third quarter of a game against Sacramento Kings back in 2015, the year that the Warriors won 73 games. I don't know if you've ever tried to relive that quarter, but if you look at the play-by-play, Klay doesn't take a shot for the first 2 minutes of it. In fact, I think he has a turnover, right? So it's really 37 points in 10 minutes. And for the first almost 7 minutes of that remaining 10 minutes, I think it's 6:58, he scores 19 points. So the last 3 minutes and 2 seconds of that quarter, he scores 18. Which is, that's what made it so unbelievable, too. It was just, it crescendoed. It was incredible. And I don't know if anybody ever looked this up, but like how many times in the history of the NBA has anybody scored 18 points in 3 minutes and 2 seconds? It's probably, you can probably count it on one hand.
Well, the
unless,
other one,
of course,
was,
Wilt did it a couple times.
You know, the 14 threes game, too. The other one that was weird about that is he had like, wasn't it like 11 dribbles or something? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like,
never dribbled.
It was some insane stat like that. Like, he had more threes than dribbles in the game.
Straight to the Hall of Fame, but one more pit stop in Dallas, apparently, on the way there, trying to get himself another NBA Finals appearance and then perhaps another NBA title. I have tennis picks, 5 of them still to come. Can I rattle them off real quick?
Yeah.
All right. On the ladies' side, I'm on Victoria Golubic against Julie Niemeyer. Golubic. G-O-L-U-B-I-C. She's at got her at -115 last night, all at VSiN.com/picks. And Olivia Gadecki, she's a +165 dog against Robin Montgomery. Those are still yet to start. And then on the men's side, there are 3. Mackenzie McDonald, the American, +128 against Emil Roussevori. Rinky Hijikata. You know Rinky Hijikata, don't you, Kelly?
I love Rinky.
-135 against Flavio Coboli. And then the over, 44.5 games in the Christopher Eubanks-Quentin Halas game, which should be a serve bot battle. Those 5, I'll run them back on the other side as well. Drew Dinsick as well. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season. With in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and betting trends, you'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need to get ahead of the action. To get the guide, though, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price, normally $240. A year. Now you can subscribe for just $199 with promo code ANG. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Use promo code ANG.
ANG as in a numbers game, Gil.
That's to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199. Get instant access. Access to our all-new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Let me give you those tennis plays real quick once more because I rifled through them just before the break. And I will I'll do a little price comparison to make sure that these are still in range where you should play them here as Drew Dinsick stands by. Let's see here. Okay, on the ladies' side, I have still to come because these got pushed back. I believe there was rain and there was a delay of the order of play this morning. So these are still yet to begin. I am on Victoria Golubic again at -115 in her match against Julie Niemeyer. Golubic right now is at -102. So even better for you. Gadecki, I got at +165. Olivia Gadecki against Robin Montgomery. She's +157. You can still play that. And then on the men's side, 2 sides and a total. Rinky Hijikata, I got at -135. Hijikata is now -149. I'm not sure I would play that anymore. That's too high. Mackenzie McDonald, I got at +128. +123, still playable against Emil Roussevori. And then the total, I'm sure, is still there, over 44.5. Double-checking. On Eubanks Halas, it's actually 44. It actually went a half against me. I think that's a serve bot match, and I think that goes over between those two. Yesterday, Drew and I were just talking off air, and you know this from listening to the show yesterday, everybody. I had Dion Parry against Osaka. We had the over. That's the one thing that did hit. But she was a +302 dog against Osaka. We were watching the end of this match yesterday right after the show. We bring in Drew Dinsick now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, the host of not only the Deep Dive podcast, but also, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, the first with Andy Molitor, the second with Jay Croucher. Dion Parry, I would not have expected this from her, But not only did she get nervous, her serve, she double faulted away the game. I mean, two to end it. But also there was multiple even in the game before that. The serve didn't even, it barely got to the net, Drew. Good God. The nerve of these players is not always there when the time comes.
Yeah, in the biz, we call that she got the yips.
She got the yips. Yeah.
And at the wrong time, the key question I have for you is, can you go back to the well against Naomi? Because Emma Navarro is a dog price tomorrow. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, it shouldn't be. Should not be.
No, no, certainly not.
Yeah.
Plus money on Navarro. And I mean, you know, look, Osaka had a very similar turn of form, you know, in her first round match at Roland Garros, where she looked at times just quite bad, and then came out and played the best match of tennis of anyone not named Iga at that tournament, and almost defeating Iga. So who knows? Maybe Osaka shows up and she plays a different style of, you know, just a higher quality of tennis tomorrow. But Navarro is a really tough player and a really tough draw for her. I'm surprised that she's a dog price. And just in general, I agree with your sides. My biggest stake today that I have in action, I'm going with the hot qualifier, Alicia Parks, taking on Woz. Never really been a Woz grass fan at all. And I got to tell you, if there was one player, you know, in the women's qualifying who really caught my attention, it was Parks. She was dynamite. So I hope she carries that form into this match and she takes down Woz at a dog price. So that's a fun one. But yeah, it's been lean going so far for the real big underdogs outside of course, the great Jessica Buzis Monero, who gets her first ever main draw grass win of her career against the defending champion today.
Yeah.
Amazing. Marketa Vondrousova now moves to 12-14 on grass in her career. Of course, seven of those wins came in one tournament last year where she won the title at Wimbledon. Absolutely bizarre kind of, you know, career numbers that Vondrousova is putting up at this point.
We were talking about this on the Beating the Book Wimbledon Preview podcast, me, you, and Zach Cohen, how last year's Vondrousova run to the Wimbledon title will probably be the one, not probably, is. Like, the Wimbledon preview pod we did last year, I remember saying to you afterwards, Drew, we didn't even bring up her name. And your response quickly was, why would we have? She had won two grass matches in her career. I was in Korea at the time. I was looking at the scores, and I just remember thinking, I was like, am I in some, like, time zone vortex where I'm not looking at the proper scores? And here she is getting bounced by Buzas Monero, Jessica Buzas Monero from Spain here in round number one. 12-14 lifetime. Wow. Yeah. And a Wimbledon champ.
The fact that Buzas, I honestly, like, hat tip to Buzas Monero getting into the draw without qualifying. I had no idea she was, she had compiled enough results to this point to be, you know, top 80. I guess she's 83rd right now. She qualified at Wimbledon last year. She's played five grass matches in her life, and then she just goes and straight sets the defending champion. It's absolutely wild. And, you know, it's a little bit of flat earth in general on the women's side of the tour on grass, as we've kind of well documented, and anything can happen. But that was a wild one. And I think in general, just kind of speaks to the fluky nature of last year's champion.
I want to, for those who are looking to jump in on futures, maybe didn't pre-flop, Aryna Sabalenka pulled out yesterday. She had indicated over the weekend she's got this shoulder thing. It's not common for tennis players. I read that to be a rotator cuff injury. It sounded like she was saying it's kind of baseballish, but she didn't say those words. But she's out anyway. And then on her side of the bracket yesterday, Mira Andreeva, gone. Zhang Xinwen, gone. Some others, Cirstea. Naomi didn't look great. I had said before the tournament, I was like, Maddie Keys and Daria Kasatkina was over the weekend where I made bets on her because she's on that side of the bracket as well. You look to certain players on that half as well, the non-EGA half?
Well, yeah. I mean, my biggest runner was pre-tournament was Coco, and then post Sabalenka pullout, I added more because I didn't think that the move really reflected how big of a deal that was. And Yeah, I mean, the draw is wildly imbalanced now. The top is tough, the bottom is weak. Yep. And Coco, I thought, you know, that she has not had a lot of success at Wimbledon, which is why she's kind of flying under the radar. But her performance yesterday, I thought, was outstanding. I mean, she took on a player that she's clearly better than, but she is, you know, has had difficulty in the past really handling Dolheid's kind of craft. And I thought what we saw from Coco yesterday showed a lot of new kind of weapons. Hadn't really ever seen her utilizing the slice like that. And her net play was outstanding. I think she won 9 out of 10 points. She went to the net. And just in general, the variety and the quality of her grass game yesterday, to me, looked like the confirmation I needed to kind of believe this sincerely that she has a chance to win this. But, you know, she's going to have a tough quarterfinal opponent, whoever comes out of the top half there in Q4, if it's Keys, if it's, you know, it could be. There are a number of runners up there who are pretty decent. That's going to be a tough one. But the Q3 opponent in the semifinal, all of a sudden on the bottom half, now looks real winnable. I agree with you that Kasatkina has the highest likelihood of anyone coming out of Q3, which is crazy. I mean, she's a good grass player, but like the fact that her chances of coming out of Q3 were close to zero with Sabalenka in the draw, and now they're like 25%. Like, yeah. She will not ever beat Sabalenka. If Sabalenka is out there with the torn rotator cuff, she's still probably going to beat her. But now with her out of the way, that really does open up her path pretty clearly. And then the other massive winner was Emma Raducanu. A name you may not have heard for quite a while, because she has done, again, like, you want to talk about something that in hindsight looked pretty fluky. Her run at the U.S. Open, where she went from qualifying to champion in, you know, a year where, frankly, the WTA was down. And, you know, she stormed her way to a U.S. Open title before then, you know, backing it up to, you know, with nothing for the last 2 years. You know, she now has an opportunity to, you know, retain a little bit of glory. She obviously opted not to qualify for Roland Garros because she wanted to prep for grass. So this is kind of proof of concept whether her team was right or wrong. And she dodges Katarina. You know, she dodges Alexandrova yesterday, who pulls out. And yep. Now her draw is wide open too. So, I would expect Raducanu or Kasatkina comes out of Q3.
I think Jesse Pegula in her quarter. I think I don't even mention Danielle Collins because she's in Iga's quarter, but it may have a big American flavor on the ladies' side. We'll come back, Drew, on the Olympics, on the NBA, and more next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the Date. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We'll get to those NFL props coming up on the show. I just want to say the Royals July bet, Kelly. Circa closed when Circa took them down yesterday, when the month of July essentially started with 3 baseball games yesterday. The Royals were plus 650. And at Caesars, I don't know, is it still up at Caesars? The short shot at 7.
Really?
Yeah. Did we do that?
That moved. Was it 17 to 1, right? That you bet it at?
Yes, sir. 17 to 1.
I typed up on that graphic. Yeah.
Drew Dinsett, kind enough to join us once again at whale_capper. The Deep Dive podcast he does with Andy Molitor, about to launch into his unbelievable NFL previews on that podcast. And then NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with the Australian-accented Jay Croucher, which makes everything sound super-duper smarter than he already is. It's Drew Dinsett joining us from Long Beach, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Men's side, there's really no headline yet. It's just kind of standard operating procedure so far on the men's side?
Yeah, I mean, the big headline is we were going to say farewell to Sir Andy Murray in singles. And not to be. He was going to kind of get his going away, you know, opportunity on center court. Withdraws, match, now gets a lucky loser. I think Murray, it sounds like, is probably still going to try to play doubles. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with him. And I definitely didn't fancy him as going to go deep into this tournament regardless, because he's just had back surgery. But all said, it is still kind of fascinating that, you know, Rafa goes out in the French and now Andy Murray is gone. And at Wimbledon, Joker is kind of the last of the kind of old guard remaining. And, you know, I think his, I'm kind of coming around on his draw. The bottom half looks very beatable. Q3 is sort of the, you know, the by default weakest quarter because it doesn't have a center. It doesn't have an Alcaraz, doesn't have a Djokovic. And Djokovic got, I think, a very, very fair draw, particularly early on. Like if he was going to get tested in this tournament, it was going to be in the first couple rounds before he had his legs under him. And, you know, before he kind of knew sort of the state of his knee and what he was capable of doing. And he gets a very, very soft landing here with taking on, basically back-to-back qualifiers who have less than about a 2% chance to defeat him outright in a best of five match. So he'll be there in round three. And that's where things will get a little bit interesting. But overall, I don't really see anyone on the bottom who has enough pedigree, enough quality to get the better of him on grass. The breakout player so far for me, at least eyeball test, has been the Frenchman who came through as a lucky loser, Giovanni Tesi Pericard. Holy smokes. He has one of the most dynamite serves that you will ever come across. So far right now, he's up 2-1 in a fourth set breaker against Seb Korda. He has 40 aces. His first serve percentage, points won, 84%. Like he is just absolutely dynamite. And Korda has so far produced 11 break chances and converted zero of them, because basically, like, Pericard's doing this thing where, you know, when you have confidence in your serve and you're like, okay, well, first was a fault. I'm going to take a little bit off this second serve. Not Pericard. Like, he's out there bombing 140 on his second serves. And I don't know that I've counted as many second serve aces as I've seen in this match so far this morning. So very, very cool to see him kind of show up, because he is just shooting up the rankings right now. He is having a magnificent spring. Just in general is kind of has exactly the right mindset to be a problem in that portion of the draw. So yeah, excited to see what Jack Draper looks like, if the nerves are going to be tough for him now that he's sort of carrying the weight of expectation of the UK. I think in general, Sinner took care of business yesterday. He's got a tough test against Berrettini tomorrow. And I think in general, that's going to be a fascinating match to watch, because Sinner had some wobbles yesterday, and I thought he was going to be the best player in this tournament. I thought he was kind of exactly primed to break out on grass, because, you know, remember 2 years ago, he gave a very informed Djokovic a very real test in the quarterfinals, and took him to, a fifth set. With the level he was able to produce, and Sinner is now a much better player than he was then. So I kind of had assumed that this championship went through Yannick Sinner, but again, yesterday I was not super impressed with what we saw, even though he was up against a real opponent. Just in general, like, his path is not easy here. So I think Alcaraz is still a bet against for me, but you know, and just that's more of along the lines of having not seen the form from him so far this year that he carried through last year to the championship. But this probably comes down to the big three and winner of Sinner, Alcaraz taking down Joker.
Yeah, Yannick Hanfmann, a 35-year-old, took a set off and covered the game spread against Sinner yesterday. All right, NBA, anything happened so far free agency wise, and we'll throw in the draft as well, that has triggered anything for you bet wise, thought wise, anything?
Not really. I would say that I agree with the market move on the Sixers being the second choice in the East. But at the same time, if you were betting your hard-earned dollars in the month of July on the Sixers, you are putting putting your hopes and dreams in the health of Joel Embiid's knees, which is a bad bet in my experience. So if you want to have some Sixers exposure, I'm fine waiting until April. And I think in general, there's no one in the East that has done much to really kind of move the needle for me. I thought the price that the Knicks paid to get Mikal Bridges was hilariously bad. I know that, like, a lot of those first round picks are just going to be in the high 20s, and they have a good enough young core that they're going to be good for all of those years that they're giving up their first to the Brooklyn Nets. But I don't rate Mikal Bridges even close to the compensation that they gave up for him. And then, yeah, I was a little surprised at some of the moves in the West. I don't think anyone's gotten better besides the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the biggest move for the Oklahoma City Thunder was bringing in Alex Caruso. And, you know, they obviously spent some money on, you know, Hartenstein, who's good. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, that's a fun piece, but they have now a potential closing five on defense that looks extremely dynamic and very, very good. I don't see a weakness now on the defensive side of the ball. And the Thunder should be able to basically win with defense next year. And I would make them the, you know, the favorites in the West as currently rostered. And everybody else looks to have taken a step backwards. Nuggets take a step backwards. Timberwolves not really doing anything is surprising. I thought Dallas got worse. They have now more defensive questions within the absence of Derek Jones Jr. I think in general, LA Clippers down, Phoenix Suns nothing. The West, which looked like a gauntlet on paper, particularly last year in the playoffs, as you looked across the quality of teams that made it into the final eight, now it looks like it's taking a step back to me. So if the Celtics aren't fairly priced to win the title, considering that I think they have at least a 50% chance to win the East, I think that's the bet to be made.
And Jason Tatum just signing a new deal where he's making over $50 million a year. $50 million, not bad if you can get it. All right, last
big number.
You know, $50 million here, $50 million there. All of a sudden, it's real money. All right, last 2 minutes here. Last week you came on the show. You were kind enough to give us, and I think I'm counting this right, 47 different Olympics bets. do you have anything, any Olympics thoughts of the moment as we approach the Olympic Games here later this month?
I watched, so we can follow up the swimming commentary with a little thoughts of track and field and gymnastics, which I watched this last weekend. A little up and down for us on the track. As far as kind of qualifying goes, we had a couple expected performers who I had kind of softly penciled in for gold, like Aething Liu in the 800 for the women, who did not qualify because she tripped and fell in the final race. In general, like outside of Sydney McLaughlin, I wasn't especially impressed with any of the runs from any of the men or women. I think our men sprinters in general, looking at the market, are a little overrated coming into this one. So I'm kind of bracing for disappointment out of Team USA on the athletics.
Wow.
In week two. And then the opposite for gymnastics. Our women's gymnastics program, you'll remember from Tokyo, Simone Biles was expected to win 5 gold medals, but she got the twisties, Gil.
She did.
And the derailed her efforts in the 2020 Olympics. And I got to tell you, her qualifying up in Minnesota was dynamite. She was as good as her peak performances in vault, in floor, and close in balance beam. So that launches Team USA to very likely gold for the team. It launches her to likely gold for individual all around. And she should win gold in, I think she will win gold in vault, probably floor and beam as well. So she's back in the 4 to 5 gold medal territory, which would be huge because Team USA's over 39.5 gold medals is staring at me.
Will they put up a world record prop for McLaughlin, probably?
Oh, without question.
Without question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would take yes on that because she looked like she had more to go.
We got steeplechase.
That's next week. We got twisties and yips in two consecutive segments. Well done, Drew. Thank you.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet with the NFL smarter. That includes in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections for every team, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, prop betting guide, plus best futures bets from the VSiN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. You got to go to VSiN.com/guide, G-U-I-D-E, to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. That's VSIN.com/guide. And again, everybody did a wonderful job on that. Special shout-out to Adam Burke, Matt Humans, who always do great jobs on every guide. Wes Reynolds is always prominently featured. Zach do a wonderful job. And the NFL betting guide, of course, is at the top of the heap, if you will. How great is it to talk NFL, to like start to talk NFL again?
It's great. Yeah, it's great. We're getting there.
I don't know if you know this, but we just talked women's gymnastics in the last segment.
That's right. Watch out.
In the course of the last three numbers games, we have talked NHL draft and women's gymnastics. That's what we do. It's what we do. How about some NFL, though?
I want that steeplechase bet.
That's coming. Have you ever seen anybody like live doing the steeplechase?
Oh my gosh, yes, it's fantastic.
It is hilarious.
It's my favorite event. That's why I bring it up.
I'm sure it's a quick Google search, but the thought of actually coming up with that event. Here's what we're gonna do. You know track, right? Now we're gonna put water in there and hurdles.
I always thought it was like there's track and there's cross country, right? And then some guy was like, wait a second, what if?
what if? How about a puddle of water?
How crazy would this be? It's like, not really, bro, not that crazy.
And it really is the equivalent of a puddle. Putting a puddle
it's
in there.
Like a puddle. It's a puddle.
A square puddle. Anyway, Kelly Bidlin, if we can get Kelly Bidlin to do a steeplechase once around the track.
I couldn't make it over that damn hurdle. Are you kidding me? I couldn't make it over that hurdle even without jumping. If I tried to, like, climb my way over, it would still fall over.
I couldn't make it over that damn hurdle.
I couldn't put no weight
on
it.
It's a good point. We've seen what happened with Kelly on the football field, so we don't want to do that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that puddle jump seems serious. I don't know if I can put that strain on my calf, okay?
Oh, man. Okay. It's been by, and I'd love to know, is there, like, somebody who mastered this event? Who is the Michael Jordan of the steeplechase?
And obviously, you get, well, I don't want to say obviously because I don't know this, but you get points deducted or whatever if you hit a hurdle, right? If you just do hurdles, right? So do you get points deducted if you hit the water?
Points deducted?
Or whatever, right? Like, don't you get time taken off if you're just doing regular hurdles?
Oh, yeah, you get...
You knock over a hurdle.
Well, it's going to slow
like
you down.
Time penalty or something?
Yeah, there's no point system. It's just timing on everything.
I thought there was a penalty of some kind.
Maybe in the steeplechase there is. I don't know. But not in, like, normal hurdles.
Not normal hurdles?
No, okay. Just slows you down. You think, like, Edwin Moses, when he won all those hurdles, they're like, I'm sorry, Edwin, you knocked over three of these.
Wait, so what's the point of the water, then? Like, you could jump in it, jump over it, like, it doesn't matter.
Let's talk NFL draft props. Again, one of these things we should have prepped before we got into a sidebar. We should have done steeplechase prep.
We're going to dive deeper into the weirder events of the Olympics, yes.
All of it, right? Like a shot put. Who decided, like, putting something right under here?
Yeah, I don't know. You know the one I loved? Do they still do it? Is it handball where it's like the...
Yeah, just... Yeah,
like
yeah.
You throw one in and it's like soccer, but they got like a three-point line.
Instead of soccer or hockey, it's just using your
hand. I like that one. I don't get it, but I like
that one.
Like, I...
every country...
If there was a team that played here, I'd go check it out.
Every country in the world plays it except for us. We're like, we're not playing that. So many of ours are. Our sports are just better than yours. Why should we play this stupid sport? Anyway, it's an ugly American viewpoint on things. But I'm sorry, I fell asleep at halftime of the soccer game, so I kind of stick by it. All right, NFL. Good on DraftKings because they put up these props, which, again, are titled Drive for Week 5. It's really Drive through Week 5, but what it is essentially is a matchup between two teams with a tie thrown in because, of course, two teams can go 3-2 or 2-3 or whatever and tie. Good on Kelly for finding these because I think these are super duper bettable. My God. All right. Let me just go through a couple that I love. I like a lot of them, but the two that I just think are slam dunks are these two. One, the Commanders are paired against the Patriots. The Commanders are -135. Drive for Week 5. Commanders are -135. The Patriots are +225 in their matchup. And the tie is +275. Kelly. This is not a homer pick at all. Give me the Commanders at -135. Here is the Commanders' first five games. At Tampa, home Giants. At Cincy, at Arizona, home Cleveland. All right. Sure. Let's say you don't like them. All right. You give them the Giants game, right? They can't win one of the at Tampas or the at Arizonas. Or the home Cleveland?
They definitely can.
Okay. Give them two wins. Here's what New England has. At Cincy, home Seattle, at Jets, at Niners, home Dolphins. Stop it. Just by default.
All right,
Commanders, -135. End of story, bet it.
Okay, that is for New England. For New England. That is most likely... I mean, that's between a half and 1.5 wins.
I was going to say, bro, if you go 1-4,
right.
you're happy.
Okay, so this is the one you and I matched on.
Okay.
I think it was the first one I looked at, and I said, what am I missing here?
Oh, that's interesting.
And this is, I think I need to throw this out there now. I like Jaden Daniels. I am high on the Commanders. So, like, when Gil and I are probably simpatico on them throughout the season, like, I'm just throwing that out there now, okay? So I'm with you on that. That one jumped out immediately, too, because it is. You're talking Washington. You talk through it. Bucks, Giants, Cardinals, all extremely beatable in my opinion. And it's okay. Then you're looking at the Bengals and the Browns. Fine.
I did the thing where I just looked at the schedule first, and then I put my hand over like the price on the app, and I'm just like, okay, I think it should be this. And then I'd be like, what?
So I did that. It was funny because a couple times where you're like, what? Like what? A good way? And then what? You're like, okay, maybe they're way too favored the other way.
Oh,
I don't know, man.
Some of these. So I love the Commanders in that one against the Patriots. -135.
Can I bring up another Commanders one?
Oh yeah, please go ahead.
Because they had another one posted against the Bears, and I am not as high on the Bears this season as I think a lot of people are.
Okay, how come I didn't see this one?
That's where I said before. I think I was looking in. I was looking in another state that I think had more options.
That's why I didn't
listed.
See it.
Yeah.
What was I looking? New Jersey, probably.
Yeah, I think you're in the New Jersey one because that's where it usually defaults you. So, the Bears. So this is Commanders. The pricing on this +390 on the Commanders, +390 on the tie, and then the Bears were like, you know what, -600 or something like that. Okay. Sure, the Bears get the Titans at home, then they're on the road against the Texans, on the road against the Colts. That's 3 weeks in a row to start the season with, I don't know, some AFC South teams, Gil, like that. I think the Texans are going to be great, but the Titans and the Colts, I got a lot of question marks about and could be better than where I think they're going to be at. And I like the Colts, so I think that Colts game stuff. Then they get the Rams at home, the Panthers at home. Okay, that's fine, but we just ran through that whole Commanders schedule. I don't know that there's a huge difference between what you're likely seeing there. So I think if you bet, I mean, I would take a shot at the +390 on both the Commanders and the tie. I'd bet both because I think there is a chance that they could end up tying there. But with the number that long, you can easily do that. So I think they're probably right around the same record, but the Commanders could eke that out. So that was the other one I liked with the Commanders.
These are so good. Like, I would bet so many of these. I didn't see that one, quite frankly.
That's right. I swear I pulled up a list.
Let's do another one of yours because I want to save my second one for the next time.
So the only other one I landed on that I thought I would definitely bet was the Dolphins over the Bills. And this is, I mean, what? Both the Bills and Chiefs, right, with some pretty tricky starts out of the gate. Cardinals at home first for the Bills, but then it's Bills-Dolphins. So that is big,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like when some of these, they play each other.
They play each other. Yeah.
And so, also some involve byes.
Some involve byes,
yeah.
Yes. It all important to keep in mind. So then they have a bye. They have a bye. Jags-Bills. Jags at the Bills is their next game, and then their week 5 game would be Bills at Ravens. Okay, so Dolphins then, Jags at the Dolphins, Bills at the Dolphins. Talked about that again. And then it is Dolphins at the Seahawks, but they get a little extra rest there, and then Titans at the Dolphins would be those games. So if you take care of business, it's really big taking care of business against the Bills. But when you're talking Seahawks, Jags, Titans, give me that over, yes, the Cardinals should be easy for the Bills, but Jags, Ravens are your other two opponents there. I think there's a little bit of value on the Dolphins. So I like that one, over Miami at -140 over the Bills and the tie option.
All right, I like one as much, if not more, than my Commanders over the Patriots call, the Commanders at -135, but I will get to the explanation on that coming up after we talk soccer. Let's talk soccer with Paul Karnek, because we have Euro Cup 2024. The quarterfinals are not completed yet in terms of who's playing. We got to determine that today. He's got thoughts on that, and we will look back at the United States performance yesterday, which at least the half I saw, they were playing well, but the referee, not doing them any favors. We'll get into that with Paul Carr. He's got some futures plays. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.